It's a very strange Gemara. So let's just look. This is not the real Gemara, but this is it's all the words. Amar Rav Yosi bar Chanina. Not this, sorry. Just kidding. Take it. Omer, where do we start from here? Tanya, Abin Binyamin Omer. So Abin Binyamin says the following in a braisa. Il mole nisna rishus liro, la'ayin liros, in kol bria, yecholim lamod mipnei hamazikim. If a person's eyes were given permission to see them, no one would be able to stand up, no one would be able to function because of the incredible preponderance of shadim that he's surrounded by. Amar Abaye says, Inhu nefishe minon, v'kaimu olam ki kasla l'ugya. So Abaye says, they are much more many than are we. There are much many more of them than there are of us. And they stand around us the way like dirt surrounds a ditch, or like dirt surrounds a hole. Meaning like when you dig a hole, so you leave like a walls around the hole, so too the shadim like surround us the way. Amar Rav Huna, kol chad b'chad minon, every single one of us, alpa mismole, v'rvusa mimine. So he has 1,000 on his left side and 10,000 on his right side. Shenemar yipol mitzidcha elef v'rvava miminecha. Omar Rova, hay duchka dehavi bekala minayu havi. So he gives four interesting examples. He says, number one, when you know what the Yarchi Kala is? The Yarchi Kala is, in those days in Bavel, during what we call today Bein HaZmanim, all the yeshivas, the Rosh Yeshiva would go and give shiurim to the public during these 2 months, during the month of Adar, I think, or Nisan, I'm not sure, and the month of Av, I think. Like when we have Bein HaZmanim and yeshivas, so the Bein HaZmanim, they would go and they would give shiurim to the Baal Batim, and the Baal Batim would take time off to learn. But the Gemara has a little bit of a discussion about this. They say basically the Gemara has a line, Agra de Kala Duhka, that a lot of the Baal Batim who came to the Shir didn't really understand the Shir, but they got schar for forcing themselves to come. So they said, but apparently it was very crowded at the Kala Shir. So he says the Dochak that existed at the Kala was because of the Shadim. Simple shot, I don't know, like they were taking up space and they made it feel more crowded than it really was. Then he says, Hani birche deshili minayu havi. He says, also when a person's knees get sore, it's because of them. It's because of the friction caused when you walk, because you're rubbing against the shadim, I guess. And Hani mani derabbanan debalu, and when the rabbanan's clothing wore out, right, So Rashi says it's why dafka rabbis, why not just, he says no, because the Bnei Yeshiva, they just sat and learned. They didn't work, do any kind of manual labor, so like you would expect their clothing to last longer. They're not out working the fields, so why should their clothing wear out so quickly? So he says because of shadim. Mechufya didu, because of the friction of the shadim rubbing up against the clothing. I guess not, no. Don't forget to return it though. Okay. So then the last thing is Hanikare Diminakfin. So when a person's feet smack against the ground, apparently in some kind of a loud or painful way, Minayu. No, I think it means like when a person walks, so there's like a lot of, you know, shock. When a person smacks his feet against the ground, you know, like they make these shoes, you know, the special sneakers that absorb shock, you know, so that's the shock is because of the shadim, minayu, that's because of them. All right, then the Gemara ends off with an interesting thing. Haiman de boy le medalu. If a person wants to know about them, laisi kitma nihila v'neder apurai. You should take sifted ground up ashes and put it under his bed. U'bitzafra chazi kikare de tanagula. And in the morning, he'll see chicken footprints if you put these ashes under your bed. high man de boy le mechzinu. So if it's not enough for you to just know that they're there, you want to actually see them. So you want to see them. Lacey shilyasa de shunrasa. You should take the shilya, the placenta of a cat. Uchmasa bas uchmasa. Has to be a black cat, the daughter of a black cat. Buchraisa bas buchraisa. It has to be the firstborn, the daughter of a firstborn. Velekalye benura velashachkesha. Burn it in a fire and grind up the ashes. Ulamalye le'ene mine v'chazu. And he should fill up his eye with these ashes, these grounds, and then he'll see them. And then when you're done, so then when you're done seeing Shadim and you've enjoyed yourself, you should then say Ulushadye the Gufsa de Parzala. You should seal them up in some type of a tube made out of metal. Velachtame Bagushpanka de Parzala, and you should seal it with a some type of a metal seal that'll really do a good job, they'll do a good job sealing it up. Dilma ganve mine, right? Because maybe they'll steal it from him. Pashas, it means maybe the Shadim will steal it from him. So if the Shadim steal it from him, they won't be able to. They won't. Apparently, Shadim aren't able to open things that are sealed. Again, I have no idea what. Unclear. So. The list, the lachdom kume kihechi delolitza, and he should keep his mouth closed throughout this whole endeavor so he doesn't get hurt. Rabbi Ovid Hachi, Rabbi Rabbi did this. Chaza, he saw the shadim, the itzak, and he got hurt. Ubo Rabban Rachmi Alei the itzay, and the Rabbanan daven for him, and he got a refuah. Okay, that's the Gemara. It's a very strange Gemara, obviously. So. For starters, there's a big machlokes in the Rishonim about these types of things. Whether or not all these ideas of shadim and magic and lechishos, like when you whisper psukim or you whisper certain incantations. So the Torah basically forbids all this stuff. The question is, why does the Torah forbid it? So, there's two basic schools of thought. There's the philosopher's school of thought in the medieval Rishonim. So you have the philosophically oriented Rishonim, and you have the Kabbalistically oriented Rishonim. So those Rishonim, like the Rambam, did not learn any Kabbalah, they learned philosophy as their way of studying Hashkafa and Machshava. And in their way of complementing their Torah learning, so the Rambam was of a firm belief that none of this stuff was real, and the Rambam has an arichus in his Pirush HaMishnayos, which he wrote when he was very young. It's the first sefer he ever published, Pirush HaMishnayos, that he wrote on Maseches Avodah Zarah. It's a Perek Dalet Mishnah Zayin. He has an arichus there, basically ripping all this stuff and saying how, even though there are from, tzaddikim and who believe in this stuff, it's not real, and you can't understand any of these gemaras kipshutam. You can't you can't understand any of these gemaras simply as they are presented. You have to understand them allegorically as representing something else, and you have to figure out what that something else is, because the Torah forbade all this kishuf and lechishos and kameos and all these other things, but because they're stupid and they're fake, and the Torah doesn't want you dealing with fake, sheker-oriented things. But they don't work, and they don't mean anything, and they don't do anything. The Rambam is very adamant about that. He writes that there's no such thing as shadim, there's no such thing as any of this stuff, and basically, he doesn't believe in anything. And there are a lot of others who hold this way as well. There are Gaonim who write there's no such thing as Gilgulim, there's no such thing as all this, these kinds of mystical things. So it's not like the Rambam was the only one, but the Rambam would be considered like the Aviyah of Osam Afarshim will hold this way, you know, in terms of the biggest, the heaviest hitter of who's of this genre. So that would be the Rambam. Now the Ramban and those who are more Kabbalistically inclined, so they have a totally different picture of all this stuff. And they simply say that those Rishonim who don't believe in it, they simply are missing the information. They simply, I don't want to get into a lengthy discussion about this, but the main advantage to the Rambam's philosophical model is that you don't have to say things that you don't understand, that you don't know what they mean, just because they are. Meaning, it doesn't require a great deal of bitachon in addition to your actual scholarship. You know, if you know the Torah, then you pretty much know what you need to know. And then you can philosophize and understand the ways of Hashem, you know, through your actual knowledge. Now, the Rambam specifically tries to always philosophize about what things are not, not what things are. Because you can't, through philosophy, you can't describe what things are. You can't describe Hashem. You can only describe what Hashem is not. Right? So you can say Hashem doesn't have a goof. Because anything that has a goof is limited and Hashem is unlimited. Right? So, but you can't say like what it means to not have a goof. It's impossible for a human being to describe it. So you don't have to go ahead and say words that you don't know what it means. Whereas the major downside to the philosophical model is that it just might not be true. Meaning there are things that we don't understand that are true. You know, case in point, you know, if you were living at a certain time in history, you believed with Emunah Shleima that the earth was flat. Why? Simply put, because you'd be a fool to say otherwise. Like, you'd have to be a fool to say otherwise. Like, why would there be a Havamin that the earth was round? Have you ever seen someone standing upside down on the bottom side of the earth? Have you ever seen someone look curvy on it? I mean, like, everything we know about round things and spherical things, you know, just doesn't make sense to say that that's what the earth is doing. To say that the earth is moving makes no sense because, you know, we're not moving, right? It's pushed that way. But what's the answer? Sometimes that which makes more sense is simply wrong. You know, you're just missing the information. We've seen the earth from space. It's round, you know? Like, it's definitely round. We're definitely moving. You know? So, like, the fact that that makes less sense than saying that the earth is flat doesn't make it any less true. So that's the weakness of trying to approach Jewish hashkafa through philosophy, in that you're basically relying on what makes the most sense. You know? If you take, like, Aristotle apparently had all kinds of theories on physics, right? But they're all wrong because they were based on svara. Are they wrong because Aristotle wasn't smart? He was a genius, sheva geniuses. But because he relied on svara, he did not use the scientific method to surmise anything. He used logic. He used what made the most sense. What was the smartest thing to say? You understand? What?
Based on his knowledge.
Based on information, but he didn't do experimentation. I mean, everyone's like, oh, Newton had an apple fall on his head. No, Newton did experimentation to surmise that there's something called gravity. Now, just to put it this way, what makes more sense, logically, that things fall down because they're heavy, or things fall down because there's some invisible man or force that you can't see, touch, smell, taste, or feel, pushing them down, right? I'm going with the heavy every time. Any svara that, you know, first of all, just logically, any svara that introduces fewer outside variables into the mix is the more logical one, I would think. You know, why do I have to invent new concepts and introduce them to make things make sense when I could just use what I already know? That's point, you hear what I'm saying? So that's point number one. So the smarter of the two theories is, you know, to say
that they fall because they're heavy. But that's not true. Two things in a vacuum, when you take out wind resistance and things like that, they fall at an equal rate. Because they don't fall because they're heavy. They fall because the invisible man pulls them down. You know? Not nearly as smart of a thing to say, but absolutely true. So that's the Kabbalistic model claims that the Rambam and others who did not learn Kabbalah,
it wasn't like nowadays where it's like Kabbalah, like that was what Rashi taught in the Zohar, and like
he had no access to it. Kabbalah was taught in certain circles only. The Rambam never had access to the Zohar, I don't think, and he didn't have access to any Kabbalistic works. His Rebbeim did not learn Kabbalah. He didn't have Kabbalah. There's a comment the Abarbanel makes that at the end of his life, the Rambam learned all of Kabbalah. He found it, you know, found a Rebbe to teach it to him, and he was chozer on everything that he ever wrote. But if you believe that, that's fine, but you know,
it's not logical.
Correct. So you could choose to believe it, but apparently, I was talking to Rabbi Friedman about that once. He said, in the medieval times, and even later than medieval times, that was a very common practice to find manuscripts. I'm not saying the Abarbanel made it up. I'm saying that the Abarbanel found a book that someone wrote testifying to what he saw. That was very common. Like, you know, people had trouble because they love the Rambam, but they love Kabbalah. So they couldn't reconcile the two, so they said, he was closer. Okay, so, you know, like we say to the Christians, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to make a taina in front of 3 million people, he should be closer in front of 3 million people. You know, if the Rambam is closer on all the Divrei Hashkafa he ever wrote to the 3 million Jews, or however many millions of Jews since who have written it, who have read it, B'chori, he should be closer in public as well. It would only be fair. So,
you know what, just when you get a chance, tell everybody I was wrong.
Right. It's hard to imagine. But nevertheless, that's the general. So and the most famous critique on the books of this particular comment on the Pirush Mishnah is the Vilna Gaon in Yoredei in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, where they're talking about the Shulchan Aruch is talking about lechisha, whispering psukim or incantations to a bite. Let's say you get stung by a scorpion on Shabbos or whatever. So you, it says, the Shulchan Aruch says it's mutter to whisper into the wound, even though it doesn't do anything, because it'll keep a person's mind sane. If you think it does something, it might keep you from losing your mind. Right, or maybe because it's kisha for a lechisha. Right, one of the things that the Mishnah lists is a person who doesn't have any chelik in olam haba is lochesh al hamaka. So that's a question of what that means. But it seems like it's mutter to do it for pikuach nefesh in this case. Okay, so the Vilna Gaon there has not as long a comment as the Rambam did, but he has a comment who basically says that the Rambam's study of philosophy caused him to err in this matter, and caused him to learn all of these tons of Gemaras shelo kipshutam, and it's mistaken and it's not true.
Is he just no gay b'davar?
Is he no gay b'davar?
I mean, is that what he's trying to say? Because he was like,
he's saying so, that like, the Rambam had a theory, had a school of thought, and by definition he had to learn all these Gemaras shelo kipshutam because he was from the philosophical school of thought.
That's what I was saying, because he was biased,
right? Not a bias, it's just a question of He took certain things for granted as having to not be true. So like just like we know many things in the Gemara are allegorical, so he said that obviously all these things in the Gemara are allegorical as well. So the Gra says that that's not the case, and they're all meant to be studied kipshutan, and he uses such a lush, and he says, Ela sheyesh ba'em pnimius. So he says, but they can all be understood correctly on the simple meaning, but they also have depth. They also have an inside to them. He says, but not the pnimius of the philosophers. That's the chitzonius. He says, the pnimius of the chachmei ha'emes. He says, the pnimius of the Kabbalists, that's the That's the real pnimius of these sugyas. Okay, nevertheless, that is the machlokas. So the Vilna Gaon has a very staunch objection to the Rambam school of thought. But I saw in the Sefer Emes Liyakov by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, he has a very nice Sefer on Chlamish, and he also has on Shas. So he has on Brochus, and he has the same comment, I think, in his Pirish on Chlamish, that he says something which I find very puzzling. He says that it's possible that the Rambam is not ignoring this Gemara. The Gemara says they're real, you can see them, you can do this. Like, where's the allegory? It's not allegorical. So he says, no. What it means is that in the times of the Gemara, we know the Gemara says that every Amora had the koch to be Mechayim Mason. So he says the kochos of Kiddushin and the abilities of Torah were just way out there, much more in the open than what we have or even what the Rambam had in his times. And he said, therefore, the koch of the Shadim was much more out in the open also. He says, but by the time the Rambam came around, it wasn't that way anymore.
So you believe that they were
I mean, it says so in the Gemara, that the Gemara says the Kitanim Shebachem Mechayim Mason, that it's the smallest of the Amoran could have been Mechayim Mason. So they had the koach of Tchias HaMason. You know, so
trying to do it.
There are cases where they did it. The Gemara in the end of Bava Kamma has with Rabbi Yochanan in his Talmud, right? Whatever. Okay, there are cases. So, who was it? Rabba and Rabbi Yosef? Rabba and Rabbi Zeira, they always had a chavrusa every Erev Shabbos. No, not that. Not that. That's also true. That wasn't what I was thinking of, though. But that's true also. So it says that he shechted him and he brought him back to life. Right, so there are Gemaras that say such things.
But then with all that Gemara, though,
Gemara Shah says he wasn't really.
No, but even if you hold that he was, and he could did bring back to life, but the next year he says, I can't rely on that Merah again.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be able to bring him back a second time. Lav
Dafka, he just said, I'd rather not die and take my chances. You know, like, once you're dead, you're Bechazkas dead. You don't want to take that chance. I don't know, whatever. The mice, it's on the books like that. You know, you could say, like the Marsha says, and others say on that Gemara, it doesn't really mean he killed him. But okay, but it says the Gemara killed him. So whatever. I'm just saying, who was it? Rabban Reb Zeir? They had a Chavrusa every Erev Shabbos and Sefer Yetzirah. And at the end of the Chavrusa, they created an Igla Tilsa, and they would eat it for Shabbos. That's where they got their Shabbos meat from. They created a cow every Erev Shabbos, and they ate veal every Shabbos from the cow that they created. Igla Tilsa. They ate Igla Tilsa.
I don't know.
What? That's, doesn't apply to a Sefer Yetzirah reveal. So,
which rabbi?
Many rabbis. Not anymore, necessarily. I don't know, Schechter held that way for a time, but I think now he says it's okay. I'm not sure though. There were major problems with the certain real halachic issues with the veal, but it's nothing to do with this. Okay, but anyway, okay. So that's the machlokas. Rabbi Yaakov wants to say that the metzias changed in the times of the Rambam, but the way he seems to say it is that the Rambam knew that they used to be real, but now they're not anymore. But that is, if you read the Lashon of the Rambam, that's not what he says. So I don't know what to say about that. He mentions, Rabbi Yaakov mentions that he says that when the Chafetz Chaim had the famous Maisa with the Dibuk, so the Chafetz Chaim himself said, the Chora, this one will be the last one. Because of the metzias of the world is changing, that things are much more hidden than they used to be. So there won't be any more D-books out in the open like there are now. I told my guys this already, but I heard Aid Me the Aid from Shlomo Elimelech Trilman Zatzal. I heard, who was a student of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, who was there, that Rabbi Chanan told Rav Drillman that the story is 100% true. Whatever happened, I'm saying, the point is, I didn't used to believe the story. I heard secondhand. ABPA from a Mochana Wasserman. I'm saying from a real Talmud in Baranovich, you know, ABPA from Rabbi Chanan, that Rabbi Chanan said, if you don't believe the story is true, you're calling me a liar in my face. And he was pretty adamant about it, apparently. So, the chore of these things do exist. Okay, that being said, I wanted to say over a beautiful pirush from Rav Kook on part of the Gemara. This is a Sefer Ein Aya, which is really, really fantastic, on the Agaditas and Brachas. There's two volumes on Brachas, two volumes on Shabbos, and I think that's it. But I don't know. But what we do have is quite excellent. So he says a beautiful part. He says, first of all, the opening statement, Abba Binyamin said, if we would be given the ability to see, we would not be able to function because of all the shadim that surrounded us. So Rav Kook says an amazing thing here. He says, Yesh bazeh, I won't read the whole thing, but Ha'ara chashuva v'hashkit libos b'nei adam ha'mishtokikim l'das kol nel ha'michok sikhla. This will give people who complain and they want to know everything that they can't understand. Why can't I understand it? What's going on? Why does Hashem keep these things from me? He says, this will keep them quiet. He says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always looking to do what's best for us. And he says, do you think for one second that if it would be best for us to understand everything, that that's not exactly what Hashem would do? Hashem is trying to always do the ultimate good. He says, and here the Gemara is just giving you a taste. He says, you want to know why you can't see Shadim? Because if you could, you would go out of your mind. So Hashem, in His infinite mercy, makes it impossible for us to see them for our own good. He makes it impossible for us to see them so that we can continue to function. He says, and that's the pshat of all these things. He says, don't think that this concept, this godly idea, oh, if I would only understand that, I would be able to serve Hashem much better. I care. If you would understand it, you would serve Hashem much worse. Everything Hashem does is so that we can serve Hashem perfectly according to our abilities. And if Hashem holds something back for us, He's doing us a huge favor. He's giving, right? And that's, I mean, just to expound on this slightly, this is the yesod of kinah. Kinah is, if I would only have that, everything would be so much better, right? The answer to that is, you have exactly what is perfect for you. Hashem put us in this world to serve Him, and He gave us everything we needed to serve Him perfectly for ourselves. We don't necessarily have the kishronos of the gra. We don't have the neshama of the great tzaddikim and the logic of the Rambam and all these abilities that we have is perfect for us, you know. And that's how we're supposed to serve Hashem. And the things that we can't understand, it doesn't mean we shouldn't try to understand things, but the things that Hashem v'dafka keeps from us, that's the ultimate chesed, just like every chesed He does for us. We know exactly what we need to know in order to serve Hashem perfectly. That's the idea. Okay, then he continues on and he says, what are these four examples that Rava gives? So he says, the duchka de kala, right? The fact that the shear feels cluttered. So he says, what does that mean? So he says, you have to understand something. When we talk about Shadim, we're talking about the kochos of Tumah. The kochos of Tumah exist so that the world can remain in balance, so that we have Bechir Chavshis. Any Kedusha that exists in the world can only exist if there's also a balance of Tumah. For example, when the Anshei Knesset HaGedola were mevatel the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, what else did we lose? No, we lost the koach of Nevuah, correct. We lost the koach of Nevuah. Because in a world in which Nevuah exists, there's no, I mean, I'm saying it kipshuto, I don't know if this is what everybody would say. In a world in which Nevuah exists, there can't be anything called agnosticism or atheism. Like, we have people who talk to God, whose messages from God are 100% clear, right? So there's nothing, the kochos of kedusha that exist in the world prevent anyone from denying God. Therefore, Hashem creates a yetzer hara not for atheism, not for agnosticism. He creates a yetzer hara for avodah zara, and that's the polar opposite, which keeps the world in balance. Till the Antri Knesset Gola said, "It's just not worth it. We're losing this battle, you know, and it's not. We're not getting enough out of the upside for the downside to exist, right?" But nevertheless, it still was a huge trade-off. But that's the idea. You know, I just one more har, even though it has nothing to do with this. I always thought to myself, you know, the concept of people have sveikos and emuna, and it doesn't present itself as a yetzer hara, right? It doesn't sound like a yetzer hara. It's like, oh, he's such a tzaddik, he just never has sveikos and emuna, right? And I'm not saying otherwise. I'm not saying it's not true. But I think it's possible that La'asid Lavo, you know, like the Gemara in Sukkah says, when Hashem slaughters the Yetzer Hara, we're going to realize that just as we look at Ovdei Avodah Zarah as such idiots, such fools, like, you believed in that? Like, because now the Yetzer Hara for it no longer exists. So this, that's the way we'll look at our own Sveikus and Emunah. As like, we look at them now as like, yeah, that makes sense. I get it. There are these big burning questions, you know, and like, I understand the type of person who, God forbid, becomes an atheist, because like, I hear the tina sort of, you know, but like, I think you could argue that the same way we think of this, not as a yetzer hara, but just using your brain. You know, there's an interesting apikoros, I don't want to say his name because maybe he's not really an apikoros, although he probably is. He's a Bible scholar who is otherwise a practicing Jew, but is a big proponent of the documentary hypothesis. Documentary hypothesis. Dr. Seuss is very interesting stuff also. So supposedly once somebody said, "What do you say to someone who calls you an apikoros?" He said that I would rather Rabbi so-and-so call me an apikoros than violate the Issa Doraisa of Baal Tashchis on the brain that Hashem gave me. So it's a very witty remark by a very intelligent human being. Nevertheless, a truly Gaivadik remark. But what's he really saying? He's saying, listen, Hashem gave me a brain. I have to use it. If something makes sense to me, doesn't matter that it's fear and apikoros, I have to go with it. So it's possible that La'asid Lavo, that mode of thought will be revealed not as a legitimate means of analysis, but as a yetzer hara. But this, the same way, it makes no sense whatsoever to worship Eitzim V'Avonim. It will make no sense to deny the existence of Hashem or to deny the divinity of everything around us. But it makes so much sense today. But that's only because we have that yetzer hara in us. You understand what I'm saying? It's a thought. Anyway, so that's what these shadim are. They're the balance of the existence of kedusha in the world. So Rav Kook explains, he says, what does it mean, the dukkha dekala? Right? It means that when they went to a shir, they said, oh, it's too hot in here. It's too cramped in here. My seat's not comfortable. He says, oh, it's no fun. It's hard to focus. Right? So he says, what are you kidding me? He says, if the world existed on a fair plane, when the Jewish neshama would hear a word of Torah, it would literally jump out of your body to run to the words of Torah. You think a person, when there was a shear of Torah Hashem going on, would think about, oh, I'm a little tired, or it's too cramped, or it's too hot, or this or that? No thought would ever enter your mind, because it would be impossible. Your soul would be so drawn to the Torah, you'd run through a pit of fire to get to the Torah. You know, I say, what he says is, The only reason when we go to a shir and it feels cramped is because of the shadim, quote unquote, because of the kochos atuma that balance out the kochos of kedusha.
Shadim are like
they work, meaning they work on a tuma level to balance the great kedusha that exists in this world. Torah is the ultimate kedusha in this world. Saying it's the Divrei Elokim Chayim. It's literally the words and the thought processes of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. That the soul that exists inside a human being longs to cling to the Torah. Right? And he's saying, like, the only reason that we don't run and we don't disregard anything and everything just to chop in a word of Torah is that these kochos atum are holding us back and making us feel this way. But the real teva of a person is to cling to this stuff. And he says, that's the pshat of all these examples. He says, what's the second example? He says, hani birkei deshili ninayhu. People, like, when they get sore knees. What do you mean, sore knees? He says, that's talking about mitzvos maisios. You know, when there's a mace mitzvah to take care of, there's a biker cholim, whatever it is. So he says, you don't think if a Jew with a Jewish neshama would hear that there's a mitzvah to do, he wouldn't run at top speed to do the mitzvah? He says, oh, it's so hard, I'm so tired, my knees hurt so much from schlepping. Why? Why do we complain? Why don't we run to the mitzvah? He says, because of them. It's because of the kochos atumah that balance out the kedusha in this world. They're holding us back. And he says, not only that, he says, what does it mean? Mane derabanan debolu. The clothing of the Talmidei Chachamim that wear out. What does it mean, the clothing? He says, the clothing means the midos. So he says, sometimes you find a Talmud Chacham, he knows Kol Torah Kulor, he knows a lot of Torah, but his midos are not shlemos. He doesn't have good midos. Right? He doesn't have good midos. It's the ultimate Chilul Hashem, as the Gemara in Yuma points out, but nevertheless it exists. It exists more than we would like to admit. And he says, how could it be? Just to give you a mashal, the famous mashal that everybody uses. He asked the question, when we learn Torah, Hashem gave us brains that forget. So he says, how come Hashem asked us to learn Torah if we're going to forget some of it? So the famous mashal that they give is, there was a king. Of course, every good Jewish mashal has to have either a king or a rich man. So there was a king. What? Maybe. I'm saying that, but goes without king or rich man is standard.
What's yours? Like the feudal lord guy.
Right, the landowner. The landowner who forces the Jews to do mean things. Right, so he says, the king tells his servants, he says, I need you to fill up these buckets with water. He gives out the buckets, and he gives them, and they start filling them up, and they're not getting filled up. They're in the river, they're wasting their time, their buckets aren't getting filled up. So all the servants are like, the king made a mistake, he gave us the wrong buckets. These buckets have holes in them. So he says, he must have been, all right, let's bring them back. So one guy is a good Eved, he says, no. King said, do, we do. So he kept standing there filling up all the buckets, and then he finally says, okay, I tried. He brings them back to the king. So the king rewards that guy, and he puts everybody else in jail. Why? He says to the guy, he says, when I tell you to do something, just do it. He said, I didn't want the water. I got plenty of water. He said, I needed those buckets to get cleaned out. So he said, so I told you to fill up the buckets, even though I knew there were holes in them. So the Nimshol is, he says, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't expect us to remember every word of Torah we ever learned. But he gave us Torah, a vast Torah, la'agdol Torah la'adira. He gave us so much Torah to learn, to clean us out. When a Jewish person ingests a blot of Gemara, a pasuk of Chumash, it cleans him out. It says, one word of Torah sets a person to shem on fire. So he said, Hashem didn't give us the Torah so that we could remember every word of it. He gave us the Torah to clean us out. Doesn't mean you should stop trying, but...
My rabbi gave that mushroom, like, beginning of my child for sure. Like obviously weren't really paying attention, right? Like, you're talking for a half hour, because he gave the mushing saying, like, okay, fine, so you won't remember the Torah, but at least maybe you'll forget some of the shiur you did in high school.
Maybe. So that's the idea here also. Rav Kook says, he says, Ra'ui sheyiya talmud chacham mekushat la'olam b'chol midos tovos. He says, it's ra'ui for a talmud chacham to be adorned with all the best midos. Why? Shehatorah mishamarto mikol ra. The Torah guards him from any evil. Ela b'pnei she'ayidei she'ma'orer kochos ha'maruchniyim v'avodas ha'seichel misrag she'osim z'oros gamkes amidos aros. Because when he learns Torah, he's awakening all of the greatest forces of Kedusha, so he also awakens all the greatest forces of evil. And sometimes the forces of evil win out and create a situation where a Talmud Chacham could end up having bad midos. And the Torah is not enough. And last but not least, he says, that's also what it means. He says, when a person walks on the ground and his feet smack against the ground, that's also, there aren't just, sometimes what keeps us from doing mitzvos, not just our sore knees, not just that we ourselves don't want to do them. Sometimes it's outside forces. Our environment keeps us from doing mitzvos. So he says, what kind of nonsense is that? Hashem gave us a world which is supposed to facilitate our avodas Hashem. So how could the world prevent us from serving Him? So he says, it's true. In a perfect world, the world would just serve to help us do mitzvos. But yet we have all these impediments. Everything's holding us back. So he says, that's also because of the kochos atuma that balance out the kedusha that exists. And he says, therefore, that's what it means here when it says these four things come from the shade. I think it's an interesting food for thought. Okay, that went much longer than I had planned. I apologize.